Still up in my attic, Wilbon. Still in my attic. Episode 87.
I flew 2,000 miles to Washington, D.C., and you're in an attic? What are you doing?
Yeah. I've been in the attic for 3.5 months. This is a permanent situation for me. I got the hat because I still have the stitches and the bandages. That is not a permanent situation. And we're going to start with Cam Newton. Cam Newton has reportedly signed a one-year deal with the New England Patriots. I'm going to assume that he is their starting quarterback because the guy, Jarrett Stidham, went to Auburn to become the next Cam Newton. So suddenly Belichick is swimming in Auburn quarterbacks. Wilbon, what does this do for Cam, and what does this do for the Patriots?
I have no idea, and all the people just rolling in hype have no idea either. I'm going to tell you why they have no idea, despite what they say and how expert they may be. Because this is an entirely new situation for Cam Newton. If he's healthy, that's the first one. But let's just presume he's healthy. Even then, they don't know and we don't know. Because he's never been coached like this. He's never been in this kind of environment, this particular kind of culture, which from what we understand from everybody who's ever played for the Patriots or worked for the Patriots is entirely different than any other culture in the NFL. Because it's Bill Belichick's culture. So they may hit it off, and this may be the greatest marriage in the world, and they may go to a Super Bowl and live happily ever after moving forward with more contract time, or Belichick could announce in August, yeah, we've cut Cam Newton and we're going with Stidham on to Cincinnati or whatever nonsense he comes in. We have no idea, and anybody who says he has an idea shouldn't be listened to. It's fascinating. It may be compelling. I mean, I couldn't wait to, wow, what does this mean? We don't know what the hell it means.
So this is interesting because this morning on my podcast, you took the position about Cam Newton that he might chafe under Bill Belichick and under the Patriot way. And I thought about that. Randy Moss was a guy who might have chafed under the Patriot way, but instead he did not. And he's so praising of Brady and Belichick and everything in New England. To me, the whole thing hinges on whether Cam Newton is healthy. If he's healthy, this actually could be great. He was a great player in high school where he won, a great player in college where he won. He won in the pros. He was the MVP at one point. And Bill Belichick is smarter than everybody else. Bill Belichick will design an offense that plays to Cam Newton's strengths. Now, people say, well, he hasn't done that in 20 years. That's right. He had Tom Brady for 20 years. But, Mike, he changed the defense every single week. Our friend Jason Lockenfour of CBS believes that Belichick will go with a 2 or 3 tight end package. They'll run the ball all the time, including Cam, because they run it well. It's the best thing they do on offense. And Jason thinks they're going to look this year like Baltimore last year. What do you think of that?
I think all of that's it's premature. I'm not talking about football. I'm talking about life. How are he and Bill Belichick going to get along? Is he going to be at that? Is he going to be at the meeting room at 5:30 a.m.? Sort of, I could say like Tom Brady was. Okay, Brady set the, you know, sort of set the template for that. Is he going to do those things? We don't, Tony, everybody can't play for Pat Riley or Greg Popovich or Bill Belichick. And it doesn't mean, Cam Newton's already been a great player. He's proven that. It's in him. Are he and Belichick going to get along in a way that allows this to flourish, this situation? We don't know. I'm not talking about two tight end sets. I'm not talking about that football junk. I'm talking about life. Two men who are radically different are going to have to figure
That's
out
right.
how to get along. And one of them is going to do the figuring. Belichick is going to do the figuring. Is Cam Newton down with that? Is he going to find that comfortable enough that he wants to exist in it? Tony, we don't know. People can get ahead of themselves if they want and talk about third down packages. I don't want to hear that. When those guys are in the same place at the same time, then we'll see.
I understand what you're saying. I understand what you're saying. I think Cam Newton will see this not as a last chance, but as a great chance. He'll see what Belichick has done with Tom Brady, and he'll remind people, Cam Newton will, that when he walked into the NFL way ahead of Patrick Mahomes, he was Patrick Mahomes. He could run it, he could throw it, and he could throw it deep, and he was the toughest quarterback out there. So I believe that this has a real chance. You're right, we don't know, But I like the chances here. And by the way, I now like New England's chances to win their division for the 900th year in a row.
I was going to say two quick things. One, Buffalo, not so fast with the Bills. And the other
thing
is, Tony, I'll take Belichick and Cam Newton for more wins than Brady this year. How about that? So I'm riding with Belichick to that extent because I do believe he can get this out of Newton. I ain't going to sit here and say I know for certain, like I'm hearing some people say, just after the news broke that the Patriots had signed Cam, some slightly less favorable news came down in the form of NFL punishment for the Patriots' latest cheating scandal. The NFL docked the Patriots a third-round pick and $1.1 million, that's sofa change, for illegally filming the Bengals sideline last season a week before a game in Cincinnati, on a Cincinnati tone. So, what does the punishment say to you about the offense?
Okay, so the money is a meaningless sum of money in professional sports. It doesn't mean anything. Third round pick is significant. You can get a good player. You're supposed to get a good player. You know, that's inside the top 100, right? I mean, you're supposed to get a good player with that. But the larger issue here is that the Patriots, there is not equal justice in the NFL. The Patriots are punished far more severely than anybody else, and deservedly so. Yeah. They have cheated before. They cheated with Spygate. They cheated with Deflategate. And so they don't get a break. This is going to happen to the Houston Astros in baseball. You've cheated. We assume everything you do is cheating. It smells like cheating, so it is cheating. And the interesting thing to me, Mike, is the thing that they did is so small and so petty and to me, so stupid. You know, I don't know that any other team would have been punished except the Patriots, but they deserve it on what they've done so far.
Well, if you say they deserve it, then there's equal punishment under the law. I mean, it's fair and equal. You cheat
no, because nobody
more,
else would have gotten
punished more. I don't.
Right.
I don't
know nobody else
that.
Would
and
get it, anything.
They cheat all. You know, if you cheat all the time, I mean, how many? What's the third offense? The third strike rule? And just straight criminal justice? Okay, if we apply this to the NFL and the Patriots, they're about at the fifth or sixth strike. I'm exaggerating slightly. You know, I have Patriot crime fatigue. I just don't care. In the world we live in right now, I'm always saying to you, you know, not everything is a big deal. This is not a big
deal.
It was punished justifiably. I agree with you there. Justifiably so. 8 minutes and, you know, you're stuck on this thing and you're basically, you know, you can find the information that you want from that period of time. Fine. Am I going to get carried away with this? Is this all that important given the issues facing the football industry, professional football, the NFL, the culture around the NFL? No, I don't give a damn about the Patriots and another gate right now with all that we've got going on.
Yeah, so let's just look at the timing for a second. Let's ask ourselves, which is the bigger story? Is the bigger story Patriots caught cheating again, get punished again? Or is the bigger story Patriots get Cam Newton for free? No, the bigger story is Patriots get Cam Newton for free. So who wins? Bill Belichick wins on this particular one. We move on, but we stay with football. That's right. We stay with football and we stay with famous quarterbacks. And here's your boy Tom Brady coming into the market for us. D'Amore Smith, who's the head of the NFL Players Association, says that Tom Brady's workouts and Russell Wilson's workouts are, quote, not in the best interest of player safety. D'Amore Smith said that to USA Today. And I'll ask you this, Wilbon. So do you think they'll stop?
No. Brady not paying attention to the league. He pays attention to only what he wants to pay attention to. And, you know, it's a bad look. I mean, it really is, Tony, because you have, you know, the most important player in the league. I'll still take Tom Brady as the most important player. I realize there are probably guys you consider like Patrick Mahomes who are better now. But Tom Brady's the face of the league. And if he just basically thumbs his nose at any authority to say, I'm running workouts here, I'm not paying attention to you, and he tweets out, there's nothing to fear but fear itself. I mean, Tom Brady is basically calling guys out that if you're not tough enough to come to Florida where this virus is raging and face it with me, this is what we do. We don't care about a virus. We're tougher than a virus. It looks awful, But Brady doesn't care. Brady never has cared about how anything looks, only his rules, his way, and getting to win. That's what he's about. And so somebody would have to stop him, and I don't know who that somebody is.
So I'm going to disagree with you fundamentally on this. I am, in terms of Tom Brady. I didn't know Russell Wilson was doing this. I knew Tom Brady was doing it because every workout he does is filmed and everybody consumes every little bit of it. He's working out with his own players like Mike Evans. I can understand where people say, hey, not everybody has been tested. This is a health and safety issue. So I think it's incumbent upon Tampa Bay to test their players and make sure their players are okay. But on the larger thing, Brady's getting hammered here because he's Tom Brady. Everybody assumes he cheats all the time. How could he win this much if he didn't cheat? They don't want to concede that he's the best quarterback who ever lived. To me, this is just hard work with your teammates. There's a lot of NBA players who have courts in their homes, and they practiced on courts in their homes while their facilities were closed. And that's fine. LeBron James reportedly had teammates come and practice with him. And I don't knock that. I think hard work towards a specific goal is a good thing to do. So while I concede that you're right, that Brady thumbs his nose at all authority all the time, I don't know why this is terrible if teammates want to try and get to know each other and throw the ball to each other. I don't think that's terrible.
It's terrible to say there's nothing to fear but fear itself. It's terrible to say, we're not worried about a virus down here in Florida. He said it. I'm criticizing him for that.
That's different.
No, that's not different.
Well, I'm talking about this act.
Yeah, but why do you have to film it? Does the practice or the weightlifting or the workout, they don't count? Why do you film it? Because you're thumbing your nose at people. You're saying, look at us. We are saying to the virus, we don't give a damn. Really? Is that the message that should be put out
there
right now?
You're right about that. You're right. I'm just saying that if a quarterback on a new team wants to get together with his receivers
do it
for 50 to 80 years, we would have said, good. Good.
Do it in secret. So, don't put the video out there. LeBron didn't put video out.
Oh, okay. So
God knows LeBron has his own daily newspaper essentially every day. LeBron has his whole publishing empire, right? He's Citizen Kane.
And he's doing it.
But he's not releasing the video every day like your boy Tom Brady. Don't get in the habit of defending TB12 on every single issue.
No, on this issue, I didn't even defend him on the last issue when they cheated. I know they cheated. No, I'm defending him on this issue.
You and I have drawn our first battle lines of the pandemic era. I'm with Belichick and Cam Newton or even Jason Stidham or whoever he puts out there, Bugs Bunny. Right. I'm with him winning more games than Tom Brady this year. You going to take that bet?
Yeah.
Are we on the record?
You've already said, what am I doing in an attic? So that disqualifies everything that I could say from now on. That's all.
Let's move to the state of Mississippi, Tom. Lawmakers voted Sunday to retire the state flag. Love that choice of wording, which features the Confederate flag in one corner. The vote came after direct pressure from the SEC, the NCAA, and specifically Mississippi State star running back Kylan Hill, who vowed not to represent his home state in football any longer unless the flag was changed. Tone, your thoughts on how this change has come about in Mississippi?
I'm a little bit surprised it was as quick and as easy as it seems to be. This is Mississippi. This is not New Jersey. But I think what I've been saying for a while about the NASCAR issue is pertinent here. There's no progress. There's no future with the Confederate flag. No, those days are gone. So this thing went very easily. In the deep South, what we have seen is NASCAR have an effect on the culture. And now Mississippi have an effect on the culture, shunning the Confederate flag. These are not places you expected it from, with black legislators and white legislators coming together and saying, you know what? Good. Let's move on it right now. Nobody said, who are these sports people to tell us what to do? Sports made this happen, and it is a good thing, Mike.
Sports often makes it happen. And before I credit anybody, lawmakers ain't going to be at the top of my list. Kylan Hill is. Because, Tony,
that's fine.
This was the bell. The alarm, excuse me, that went off in Mississippi. which still wants to compete specifically with the people in the states of Alabama and Georgia and Florida and South Carolina and Texas for the rights to, you know, brag about football in the South, which football and church, those are the two things, of course, and segregation. So Mr. Hill says, I'm not going to represent this state anymore. And all of a sudden, they start worrying about all the players they won't get, who will go everywhere else in the South, specifically, Tony. This harkens Sam Bam Cunningham going with John McKay and Southern Cal to Alabama. 50 years ago, in a couple of months, we can have that anniversary, September 12th, when they went to Alabama and integrated the end zone, as some like to say, when
That's
Sam
right.
Bam Cunningham
four
rushed
times,
about 150
right?
yards,
I think it was
two
four.
Touchdowns. But Tony,
oh,
Southern Cal
four, okay.
rushed for like 480 yards to about 35 for Alabama. And that, the story goes, prompted Bear Bryant to say, That's I got to right. get me one of them. He wasn't talking about a tailback. Okay, he was talking about somebody who was a lot browner than anybody he had on any team he ever coached. 1970. That's what happened then. That changed the South, to quote Jerry Claiborne, who we knew. He said that changed the nature of integration in the South quicker in an afternoon than Martin Luther King could in all the efforts and all the years. And there might be some exaggeration there, Tony, but not as much, because that is the impact of sports. And so Hill, Mr. Hill, kudos to him, by the way. I mean, this didn't even have to go down like Colin Kaepernick. This went down in a hurry. I'm not going to represent
this
you.
That's
I
right.
mean, everybody
that's
heard
right.
that. All those legislators who thought, we need these boys. We need these boys in Mississippi
well,
uniforms.
If you are a Southern, it doesn't matter where you are in the country. If you are a state and you are recruiting black athletes, you have to do this. And you want to keep the people who grew up in your state. So you have to do this. I'm amazed that Mark Emmert starts taking credit for this with the NCAA.
Please.
They're real late to the party.
Please.
The schools themselves, Ole Miss and Mississippi State, stopped flying that flag years back. And then the SEC got in. And maybe money was the hammer. But talent and sports is what this is about. Happy to credit Mr. Hill. Happy to credit everybody. And again, pointing out, Mike, that in the Deep South, we have seen fundamental change now. And in other places, we've heard a lot of talk, right? Right? And we didn't expect
yeah.
that.
Yeah, I might also add that in some places in the Deep South, you have the greatest room for fundamental change, and it's more necessary
100%.
Than it is even in other places
That's right.
where it's necessary to. So on that, Tony, we
That's
can agree,
right.
and we can also throw it to Sage and Kevin in Bristol.
Got the glasses. Got the legal pad with the notes. Let's do the happies, Wilbon. Happy 29th birthday, Kawhi Leonard. As everyone talks about what it will mean if LeBron James leads the Lakers to a title and becomes the first player to lead three different franchises to an NBA championship, what about Kawhi? If he wins, he'll have been the finals MVP on a San Antonio team that won the finals, finals MVP on the Toronto team that won, and presumably the lead dog on a Clippers team that will win the title. LeBron James is a huge star. Kawhi Leonard hasn't been for a variety of reasons. One, San Antonio had established stars in Tim Duncan, Tony Parker, and Manu Ginobili. Two, Kawhi does nothing to promote himself. He is a reluctant talker and appears to have no ambition for stardom. But he may well be the best player in the NBA. He's the Defensive Player of the Year twice. He's led the league in steals. And when the season shut down, Kawhi was averaging career highs in points, rebounds, and assists. So you tell me why Indiana drafted him number 15 in 2011 and then traded him to San Antonio for George Hill.
The coverage is so tilted, Tony, toward the Lakers that I, like you, find myself saying about the Clippers. I'm sorry, they got Kawhi Leonard. Toronto's being forgotten also. But let me say quickly about Kawhi. He says his social distancing is just fine with him because it means he doesn't have to interact with anybody, and that's how he prefers it. There's some perspective.
Happy anniversary, Craig Biggio. On this day 15 years ago, the Astros second baseman established a new modern-day record by getting hit with a pitch for the 268th time, surpassing the 267 times Don Baylor got hit. By the time Biggio retired, he'd been hit 285 times in 20 years and never once charged the mound. Biggio played his entire career in Houston when Houston was in the National League and didn't cheat. Biggio was part of the Killer Bees with Jeff Bagwell and Lance Bergman. They made it to the World Series once in 2005, losing to the White Sox. Biggio was elected to the Hall of Fame mostly on the strength of 3,060 career hits and 1,844 runs, which is 15th all-time. He also had 414 stolen bases, so if you hit him with a pitch, he was likely to steal second. Please allow me a moment of geographic pride as I point out that Craig Biggio is from Smithtown on Long Island and went to Kings Park High School, which is not Hewlett, but it's okay.
You're going to have geographic pride, Tony. He didn't charge the mound because he knew he was in there crowding the plate, and the pitcher gets some of that. I don't know if it's half, but a guy like, I don't think Anthony Rizzo, who is among the league leaders getting hit now, probably like 130 or 40, I'm guessing 130, 140, didn't charge the mound. I don't, did Don Baylor, who had that record before, charge the mound? Ron Hunt, who certainly in our youth had that record for a long time, I don't remember him charging the mound either. Some of these other guys that make that a specialty.
And a melancholy trails to Joe Bugle. The first sentence in any Joe Bugle obit will point out that he was a head coach for the Cardinals and the Raiders, and he never had a winning season, and he finished 24-56. But here in Washington, D.C., where Wilbon and I live, nobody cares about that. What they care about is a Joe Bugle, who died yesterday at age 80, put together the greatest offensive line in the history of this franchise, and possibly the most celebrated offensive line in NFL history. Joe Bugle created and crafted and coached the Hogs, who were at the core of Washington's three Super Bowl champions. One day at practice, Bugle said, "Okay, you Hogs, let's hit the sleds." And the name stuck. He was Boss Hog, and they were Russ Grimm, Joe Jacoby, Mark May, Jeff Bostic, and George Stark, and tight ends Doc Walker and Donnie Warren. And the running back who benefited most from the Hogs, John Riggins, was an honorary member. And they all drank beer together after practice at the 5 o'clock club. What a comfort it was to Joe Gibbs to know that Joe Bugle ran his line and Richie Pettibone ran his defense.
Tony, Joe Bugle, who we both knew well. I mean, as a young reporter and even as an older reporter, there was no point of having an opinion about offensive line play unless I talked to Joe Bugle. I mean, that was the last word on that topic. And I went and spent a couple of days with him in Arizona when he got that job, and I so wanted him to be successful. Russ Grimm is in the Hall of Fame. Joe Jacoby should be in the Hall of Fame from those lines, that Hog group, and he should have been in the Hall of Fame a while ago. Joe Bugle, we miss him already. Sage and Kevin, we're going to throw it back to you guys in Bristol.